Welcome to the Kansas Cyclist Podcast, part of the Kansas Cyclist website and the eRow Podcast Network, podcasts that inform by focusing both on the news and the people behind the news. My name is Edward eRow, and together with Randy Reza, webmaster of the Kansas Cyclist, we are your host for Episode 17 for March 8th, 2010. In this episode, we will be interviewing Robert Fitzgerald, founder of the Topeka Community Cycle Project. In our On the Scene section, we will be checking in with Chris Love, a mountain biker and trail builder in the Kansas City area. Our podcast provides news and information about bicycling in Kansas and neighboring states, and is a feature of the Kansas Cyclist website, which is found at www.kansascyclist.com. Links to the Kansas Cyclist podcast can be found at the website and at the eRow Podcast Network on the web at epn.ero.com. We would like to thank our sponsors, Action Wipes, VeloCal, and Grease Monkey Wipes, for their support. If any of our listeners are interested in becoming a sponsor of the Kansas Cyclist podcast or have general feedback on the show, please write to podcast@kansascyclist.com or call our phone number at 913-938-6855, as we would be very interested in hearing from you. Welcome back to the podcast. We know it's been a while since our last episode in January due to both of our schedules and, of course, my annual Nordic ski trip to Wisconsin to do the American Birkebeiner Marathon, which is up in Cable, Wisconsin. Goes from Cable to Hayward, Wisconsin, and have hooked up with a number of cyclists here in Kansas City that also do the Berkey, so was able to see them up there too. But we will be getting back to a regular schedule, so don't be concerned. Our first area is news and information. Randy, as he always does, has lots of things on the Kansas Cyclist website, but how about some highlights for episode 16?
Well, first off, we're going to start with a bit of legislative news. Both Iowa and Missouri are attempting to get safe passing laws through their state legislatures. Iowa tried this last year, but the effort stalled in the Senate after passing in the House. The Iowa proposal calls for a 5-foot minimum passing distance, and I've also seen some reports mentioning 3 feet, as well as penalties for harassing or throwing objects at cyclists. In Missouri, the bill came up in 2005, but it was killed by the insurance lobby. The current statutes use somewhat vague language, saying only that vehicles must leave a safe distance when passing. The proposed law would specify a minimum 3-foot passing distance. Now, this probably doesn't make much difference in day-to-day cycling. You're still going to get safe passers, and you're still going to get some jerks. But where this law would help is in court cases, where the phrase safe distance becomes a judgment call, whereas there's less wiggle room with a specific number. The argument, basically, is that it would make it easier to prosecute unsafe drivers after a collision. The prospects for passage in both states is pretty uncertain at this time.
Is the insurance lobby also against it this time too?
I have not heard that one way or the other.
And the reason they are is it just defines more of a liability for the driver, so
I
thus them too.
Yeah. I believe so, yes.
Yeah.
In Lawrence, a local group called the Lawrence Area Recreational Riders Initiative has proposed building a BMX track on unused city parkland. The group would build and maintain the track at no cost to taxpayers, and they're just asking the city to donate the land. BMX tracks in nearby Raytown, Missouri, and Blue Springs, Missouri, were built under similar deals. If it goes through, this would be the third BMX track in Kansas. The other two are in Topeka and Wichita. Hmm. And here's a follow-up to a story we covered last summer. In June of last year, a cyclist was killed on Highway 24 near Topeka when he was run down from behind by an SUV. The driver was originally charged with vehicular homicide, but the charges have since been upgraded to involuntary manslaughter. Turns out the driver was under the influence at the time of the collision, which accounts for the more serious charges. The driver now faces up to 11 years in prison if convicted. In Leavenworth County, the county commissioners have approved an updated comprehensive plan for the county that would require what they called bicycle shoulders on all county roads where appropriate and feasible. Turns out there's actually no such thing as bicycle shoulders, but subsequent discussions have revealed that that just mean paved shoulders. The resolution also apparently only applies to new construction or road rebuilding. Still, it sounds like a good thing. And we also have a follow-up on Bill Poindexter, who we talked with in December. Bill has started the blog called Car Free American, which you can find at carfreeamerican.blogspot.com. There, Bill discusses more about his car-free lifestyle, and he has plans to interview other car-free and car-light folks from all over. If you live car-free or car-light, Bill asks that you contact him, as he'd like to help tell you the story.
He has a Facebook page, too, on that.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And finally, an update from one other item from a previous podcast. Chris Carr, who we talked with in the last episode about the Wheels for Wells cross-country bicycle tour he was organizing, tells us that they've postponed the ride until summer of 2011. We believe that this strategic step towards increasing the amount of exposure, funding, and advocacy will enable us to have a greater impact on the water crisis than we had originally intended, he writes. So if you were thinking about joining that tour but couldn't do it this year, well, you now have a second chance. Visit wheelsforwells.org for more details.
Yeah, it's a great program, and I hope he does get more participants and brings that through for 2011.
Yep.
Also, some other big news that we actually forgot to mention in the last podcast is one of our sponsors, Grease Monkey Wipes. Founders Tim Stansberry and Aaron Wayland, they were interviewed on our episode 14, appeared on the ABC television show Shark Tank, where they pitched their product idea to a group of potential investors. It was quite interesting look behind the scenes at a product launch, and as it turns out, they got their investors and now have secured a national distribution deal. It's just fantastic. To keep up with the latest bicycling news from Kansas and neighboring states, subscribe to the Kansas Cycling News at the Kansas Cyclist website. You can subscribe both by using an RSS feed reader or via email. For even more timely news, follow the Kansas Cyclist and the Kansas Cyclist podcast on Twitter or on Facebook. Next is our upcoming ride section. There are many rides that are detailed on the website, so what do you have of interest this episode?
Well, the riding season is finally here.
Yes. It was 50 degrees today. And in fact, it was higher than that, I think.
It feels so good after that long winter.
Yeah.
Well, we have several rides to talk about. First up, the Biking Across Kansas Tour route has been announced. The ride starts in Goodland on June 4th, near the Colorado border, and runs across the northern half of the state with overnights in Colby, Hill City, Osborne, Minneapolis, Harrington, Osage City, and Eudora. The tour ends in Leavenworth on June 12th. Registration is now open, and the ride's about three-quarters full, so if you're thinking about it, you should make a move.
So have you made a second look at that? I know we talked about that this the last time. Are you considering it again this year, or...?
I'm considering maybe riding a couple of days of it.
Yeah.
Because I have a conflict with the start of the ride.
Yeah. Well, maybe we should coordinate, maybe do some on the scene since it's a little closer to us too, especially ending in Leavenworth. So.
Yeah, Eudora might be where we hook up.
Yes. Okay.
That's only about 20 miles from my house.
Yep.
The other big Kansas tour is Border Raiders, which runs June 19th through the 26th, starting and ending in Lawrence and visiting Nebraska, Iowa, and Missouri while taking in the rich history associated with the Civil War in the four-state area. Although most of the organized rides are still a little ways off, race season has already started. The Spring Fling Criterium series kicked off last weekend at Clinton Lake, and the series continues every Saturday through April 3rd. Also on tap is the That Damn Race series, run by our friend Roger Harrison, who we interviewed last July in episode 6. This series takes place at Lake Perry on March 7th, 14th, and 21st. Both of these races are labeled as very beginner-friendly, so if you've never raced before, they're a great way to get a feel for what it's all about.
And Roger's done a great job. I think it's on the Facebook group because we constantly get updates on what he's doing. So he's very much into communicating about the race.
Yeah, he's very enthusiastic.
Yes.
One big race that I wanted to mention is the Tour of Lawrence. The inaugural event took place last July, which we covered on Podcast 6. At the time, there were plans for another year, but there were no firm commitments. Well, now organizers have announced that there will be a second year for the event, which features both amateur and professional cyclists battling it out over the course of 3 days, July 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, with street sprints, circuit racing, and criterium racing. This is a really fun, family-friendly, and spectator-friendly weekend, and it's good to see this high-profile event continue.
Yeah, absolutely. We went over, actually, it was on July 4th last year, right? And we just had a great time. It was very interesting, and hopefully we'll get back and cover that again. But if you're interested in seeing some racing close up, this is the place to do it. Or if you're interested yourself in racing, great race to enter.
Coming up on the recreational riding scene, the first big ride of the season is the Cabin Fever Challenge on April 17th near Manhattan, Kansas. The next weekend features the Osage Prairie Tour in Parsons and the Spring Classic out of Lenexa. And of course, further south in Arkansas and Oklahoma, the season starts a bit earlier, and a number of rides are scheduled to roll out in March and April.
Okay, well, it is nice that today, I think, was the first day I finally felt like, boy, I want to get out and start riding. I know you've been riding all winter, right? I mean, have you stopped at all?
Not for more than a few days at a time. I've gotten out and got my miles.
Randy's very good at posting things up. We see his bicycle in all these places. Of course, I'm always challenged, where's Randy? But we know his bike has been in many different locations around Kansas, and you've found some very interesting sites too.
Well, I look forward to doing that more. The winter has mostly been about riding familiar roads.
Yeah.
I look forward to getting out and really exploring the country some more.
Yeah. Remember, for a complete listing of upcoming rides and races, visit the events section of the Kansas Cyclist website. These listings will have more details on how to sign up for the events, with both registration information and links back to the actual ride websites. Another ride we wanted to mention is the upcoming Kansas City Tweed Ride. A Tweed Ride is a non-competitive social ride that draws inspiration from the so-called golden age of bicycles in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Participants dress up in period clothing such as wools, tweeds, silks, and argyles, and if you have a classic bicycle to ride, so much the better. Tweed rides are popping up in cities all over, including Boston, London, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., and many more. This is the first Tweed Ride scheduled in our region, and it takes place on April 3rd in Kansas City, Missouri. There is no cost for the ride. Hey, do you organize a ride or know someone that does? Well, we have the perfect solution for you, and it is called VeloCal. VeloCal.org is a slick, web-based bicycle calendar that is extremely easy to set up and to use compared to other web-based group calendar systems. So give it a try, as VeloCal is built for and by cyclists, and best of all, it's free. As I have mentioned on past episodes, I organize a ride on Saturday mornings called the Quivira Park Bike Ride, which goes from May through October here in the Kansas City area. What I like most about VeloCal is that when I have to change the ride, such as for the rain, the service will send out a new email to all subscribe riders of that change. Even in the off season for me, I can post up a special ride, especially if we have some pleasant weather, and those subscribe will receive an email. It is a great program, so please click on the link on the Kansas Cyclist website and start using this calendar today. FellowCal is based in Fort Collins, Colorado. In accordance with new FTC regulations, the Kansas Cyclist podcast does not receive any remuneration from FellowCal, and instead we promote each other's services through cross-marketing on each of our websites. Okay, now it's time for new trails to try. Randy has links to almost all the riding trails in Kansas and adjoining states on the website. Is there a trail that you would like to talk about in this episode?
Well, with all the cold and snow, I haven't really been traveling much to check out any new trails, but I do have some trail news to pass along. The first bit of news I think is pretty exciting is that the National Rails to Trails Conservancy organization has selected the Flint Hills Nature Trail as their Trail of the Month for March 2010. Each month they highlight a trail from around the country, and the extra attention can really help to raise awareness and get new visitors to come check the trail out. We've discussed the Flint Hills Trail before here, and I really think it's a wonderful route. There's currently about 50 miles of the 115-mile route that's in a finished state, although the entire length is open to the public. Again, if you hadn't ridden it, I urge you to do so sometime this year.
And the Rails to Trails group, do they just recommend it? There's not an organized event during the month of March?
No. Yeah, they just basically review a different trail every month and say, hey, go try this.
Right.
Well, next up, we have a couple bits of news about the Prairie Spirit Trail. First off, the Kansas legislature is considering making the trail an official state park. Currently, it's managed by the Kansas Department of Wildlife and Parks, but it's not actually a state park, even though that's what they call it on their website. If it becomes an official state park, then the department can use state park fees to help manage it, and it would also increase this trail's chances of getting federal grants. And secondly, the Prairie Spirit Trail is celebrating a birthday. The city of Garnett is holding a birthday party on March 10th with a buffet dinner for only $7. This will be the 14th anniversary for the trail, which began as a 17-mile route, expanded to 33 miles a few years later, and then expanded again to 51 miles just last year. The number of visitors to the trail continues to grow as word gets out. If you're interested in the birthday bash, it's 6 p.m. to 8:30 on March 10th in Garnett. There's a dinner, birthday cake, a silent auction, and the trail manager will give his state of the trail address.
Sounds like fun.
It does.
As always, Randy has several, if not all, the trails in Kansas and surrounding states on the website. If you see that he does not have one listed and that you know about, make sure that you send him the information so that he can get that listed. Today in the On the Scene section, we will be talking with Chris Love, a mountain biker and trail builder from the Kansas City area. Chris is currently taking a bit of unscheduled time off from cycling following a bicycle accident. We'll let Chris tell a story and fill us in on mountain biking in the Kansas City area. We talked to Chris from a local rehabilitation hospital where he's currently being treated. Welcome to the podcast, Chris.
Oh, thank you for having me on here.
Well, Chris, before we get into talking about your accident, why don't you give us a little background? How long you been cycling?
I've been cycling for roughly about 15 years. I started in high school, cycled all through high school. I stopped for about 5 years, joined the United States Marine Corps, and that kept me busy. And then I've started again after I got out, and I've been riding ever since.
And what kind of riding you do?
I mainly ride mountain. I do a little bit of road riding, but if I do road riding, it will be on my mountain bike.
Okay, well, go ahead and tell us about your crash. What happened?
Okay, it was on February 20th, that afternoon. My friend Joe and I went for a ride. We planned on riding 30 miles, and we got about 6 miles into the ride. We came across this bridge. My rear tire slipped out from underneath me, and I landed on my right-hand side. I laid there for a second, and I said, Joe, I can't move my leg, So he got my bike off me, and so we decided to call the ambulance. Ambulance came down. They started to put me on some morphine, and they loaded me up in the ambulance, and they took me over to the hospital. And they took x-rays, and they saw that I broke my femur in two different spots, up near the neck and a little bit down below there. From there, that we scheduled a surgery on the 21st, which was Sunday, and they installed a rod through my femur, attached it with some screws, and they stapled up my the openings where they had to access my bone. And I, from there, I stayed in the hospital for another 4 days to recover, and now they sent me over to the rehab hospital, and I've been here ever since.
Wow, where'd this happen at?
This happened, actually it happened at Shawnee Mission Park. We were going south.
These were on the roads or on the
pave
trails?
This was on the pave trails. Yeah.
But it was when you were going over a bridge, one of the wooden bridges?
Yes, it was one of the wooden bridges. It was just a little bit damp that day, and I know the trails do get a little bit slick, but we haven't had any problems since. Never had any problems earlier that day, so we just continued to go on, and that was the lucky bridge that decided to get me.
Do you think it was some ice? Was it a freak accident?
I just think the wood was just a little bit slick, and when I was just coasting over the bridges, but on this in particular bridge, I went ahead and pedaled across it, and I think when I started to pedal across it, my rear tire just slipped kicked my bike out from underneath me.
So did you land on the surface of the bridge, or you land against the railing, or what?
I landed just on the other side of the bridge, right where the pavement meets the bridge.
Well, what's your prognosis look like? How long are you going to be laid up?
I would say at least 3 months.
Boy.
That's just kind of a guesstimate for now. I'm hoping to be on my bike sooner than 3 months, but we'll just have to see how, you know, my physical therapy is and just how long I progress. I mean, I feel that I'm in relatively good shape, and I should be able to, you know, make a quick recovery.
That does make a big difference, being fit.
Definitely, yes.
What type of rehab do they have you working on right now?
Basically, we've been working on my right leg, just basic stretching, walking. The last 2 days, we've been working on walking up steps, small steps, 4-inch steps. And then we're going to work our way up to your standard 6-inch step.
Do you get back on a stationary bike at any point in the rehab? Or?
I'm not for sure if they're going to put me on a stationary bike or not. I would like to try. They have them here. But I'll have to talk with my physical therapist and see maybe if we could at least get me on the bike for a little bit.
Yeah, I'm sure you're missing the aerobic type exercise.
I'm definitely missing the aerobic exercises.
How many miles do you usually put in a year?
You know, I really don't keep track of my mileage per year. I just ride till I get tired or till I feel I succeed. You know, I'm pretty much worn out.
Well, you're an experienced mountain biker. I mean, anything that you could have done in hindsight to avoid this, or tips that you could give anyone else? Is it to maybe just be careful on the bridges?
Yeah, I would say definitely any wet spots on the trails or any of the wooden bridges, just be extremely careful.
Yeah.
If you do have to cross them, at least coast across them.
Yeah. So your buddy's giving you grief over this, or supportive?
No grief over. They've been very, very supportive. I've had a lot of good friends.
That's good.
Come visit me in the hospital. You know, my family's been up here. I know a lot of people come up and just want to stop and say hi and make sure I'm being taken care of, and which I am. So I'm very grateful to have, you know, such good friends and great family.
Yeah, for such a rotten accident, you sound in good spirits at least.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I've been in good spirits since the time it happened. If you look at a lot of my photographs during the accident, I'm smiling the whole time.
I know you do a lot of work with the Earth Riders Trails Association out at Shawnee Mission Park. How's the trail building work out there?
The trail building works. I would suggest logging on to the earthriders.com website, and you can sign up for to receive an email on the next time they'll be out there building trails. And any help is greatly appreciated. We're continuing to build more trails out there. We want to expand the trails quite a bit further. But that, my suggestion would be to hop on earthriders.com website and just ask, you know, any questions that you have, and we can get you where you need to be if you'd like to assist. And you necessarily don't have to be a mountain biker or a road biker. You could be a hiker. You could be a runner. Any help would be greatly appreciated.
Are you involved in the designing of the trails there?
I wouldn't say the designing. I do a lot of the manual labor. I have been out a few times, actual flagging trails with the person that's in charge of laying the trails out.
How do they figure out where to put the trails?
You know, they've got a topo map they look at, and they figure, you know, the drainage of water with, you know, if we got big heavy rain, because we don't want a lot of the water to just sit on the trail. So there's certain things that we do to help drain the trail, keep the water off the trail, and we just kind of follow the topography of the landscape and work our way around it. And if there's a certain feature that we like, we try to lean that way. But if not, you know, we'll find other ways to go about it.
How do they go about striking a balance between, you know, making it challenging enough for people that know what they're doing and not too scary for beginners?
You know, that's why Shawnee Mission Park has got, right now they've got two loops out there right now. They've got an orange loop, which is your beginner loop, and then we've got the purple loop, which is an advanced loop. And it's really up to the rider whether if they feel comfortable enough to ride a more of advanced trail. Myself, I like to challenge myself, and I will ride advanced trails. And if you come to a spot and you don't feel comfortable, you can always get off your bike and walk it.
How many miles of trails are there out there right now?
Right now, there's roughly 5 miles. And then right now we have, it's going to be the Red Trail. Right now it's just an out in the back, and I believe it's about a half mile or a mile long. So you're looking at probably close to 5 or 6 miles long.
And that new section is going to come online this year, probably?
Yeah, we're planning for the new section to come online this year.
You've been involved in any of the other trails around the area?
I'm mainly involved with Shawnee Mission Park and Kill Creek. EMBA Trail Crew is coming to town in March to go out to Swope Park. I plan on going out there, but since my leg is still going to be really sore, I just still would like to go out there and show a face. And since I belong to the National Mountain Biking Patrol, you know, I still feel it'd be a great idea for me to go out there and at least, you know, chat with some people about it.
And Chris, tell us about the National Mountain Bike Patrol. What exactly is that?
The National Mountain Biking Patrol spun off the Ski Patrol.
Yeah.
And basically, we're there to assist and help people, educate them. Everyone that belongs to the patrol is a certified patroller. There's a test that that INBA has that you're supposed to take. And then you take a basic mountain biking course through, you know, local mountain biking club, which would be Earth Riders. And you have to be CPR qualified if you want to be a patroller, which I am. I'm a certified patroller. But the, you can also take the ambassador route, which is you don't have to be qualified in CPR, and but you can assist with any of the medical issues. Basically, you can help riders with any, you know, flat tires, or if they need a tube, or if they need, you know, nutrition or anything of that nature.
So do you carry equipment, first aid equipment and stuff, standard pack? Yeah.
Yes. When I when we patrol, there's about six patrollers, but when we patrol, we all have first aid kits equipped with what, you know, the basic, you know, first aid stuff that we'll need for most of the injuries. We always leave someone back behind at the base camp just for if we need to call the ambulance, they can we can direct them in and get them out of there quickly, quickly as possible.
So do you use radios or do you rely on cell phones?
We do have radios. We use them when we can, but mainly we rely on cell phones. Mm-hmm. Some races, it's even hard to get cell phone reception.
Right.
And with the radios, it's even harder at points. You know, if someone were to crash down in the bottom of a valley, and you're trying to radio someone up on top of a hill, but you've got a lot of trees, it's really hard to get, you know, your signal through the trees. So that's why we use cell phones quite a bit.
Well, that's very interesting. I didn't realize there was. I was on the National Ski Patrol college years and then after, so I'm very familiar with, you know, things that you carry and certifications and, you know, we even mm-hmm. had, you know, ski jackets and all that. So it was a spinoff from the Ski Patrol. So there is certification and standards nationwide?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
wow.
Definitely. You can purchase your the bike patrol does have jerseys that you can purchase from the INBA.
Yep.
And I've got mine, and plus, like I said, I carry my first aid kit, and it's just a general first aid kit. I went to a store and purchased a big first aid kit, and then I kind of sorted through and picked out stuff that I needed and stuff I, you know, didn't need. So.
Very interesting.
Each patroller can, you know. Well, you know, they do their own first aid kits. There's really nothing set in stone saying, okay, you need this, this, and this. It's,
probably a standard recommended thing, and then you can add on to that, right?
Right. Yeah. They have recommendations.
Right.
Some people add a little bit more. I'm the type of person that carries a little bit more.
Yeah.
When are the patrollers on the trail? Are you assigned certain times?
There's really not assigned certain times. It's just kind of whenever when we get together, we'll go patrol. We do a lot of the races around the area.
Yeah.
This year looks like it's going to be a pretty good schedule. And you'll see us on the trail, and if, you know, if someone's hurt, you know, definitely let us know. Or if you have mechanical problems, we'll be there to assist with those as well.
Do you help out at all with any of the road races? Do they call you in for that or ask you to?
No, I've never done any road races. Hmm. A few years back, they did patrol the Lenexa Midnight Ride.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't involved with the patrollers then, but from what I heard, they were there, and from what I saw, they were out there.
Got you. Well, Randy and I want to, we're going to be doing a piece on mountain biking. We try to cover all different aspects of it. I tend to be more of a road biker, and Randy likes, I guess you like some mountain biking, more gravel and road. But what are your favorite trails in the Kansas City area, and what would you recommend for beginners?
Favorite trails around the area? I like Chinese Mission Park. The Orange Loop is beginner friendly. There are some places that will challenge a beginner. And some of the other ones would be Landell Park. They have some nice trails. They have some beginner-friendly trails out there as well. Most of the mountain bike trails around the Kansas City area are beginner-friendly. Smithville's a great one. Swope is another great one. The Blue River Trails are great. I've ridden most of the trails around the Kansas City area, and I really don't have anything. Everything I know about them is just great. Only trails I haven't ridden has been Stockdale, so I don't know anything about the Stockdale Trail, but from what I hear, it's a nice trail system.
Mm-hmm. Well, anything else you'd like to talk about with the mountain bike scene around here, or the accident, or anything else?
If anyone would like to contact me, I'd be more than welcome to exchange some emails, phone numbers, and information. I'd be more than happy to do that.
Mm-hmm.
My email address is Chris, C-H-R-I-S, 128-1982@gmail.com.
But, Chris, are you on Facebook and Twitter, too? Or?
Yes, I am on Facebook. You can also look me up on Facebook.
Okay. And we'll put that in the show notes, too, so that people can contact you. Do you have a... So while you've been in the hospital, have you been able to keep up with things? Do you have a laptop?
Yes. I do have a laptop here. I've been keeping up on everything as much as I can.
Yeah.
It's been great.
Yeah. Well, it's been great talking to you, and thanks for taking the time to be on, and the very best of luck with your recovery. Hope you're up and around soon, and you can at least get up, maybe start pedaling on a stationary bike. So.
Right. Well, thank you for having me on here.
You bet. We wanted to spend a moment and talk about Action Wipes, one of our sponsors, and in fact, our first sponsor. Action Wipes are made specifically for athletes using 100% natural ingredients, including pure oils such as tea tree and eucalyptus. And take it from our experience, they do work great. So stop using baby wipes with all that alcohol that can and does dry out your skin with repeated use, and try Action Wipes. I wanted to tell a little personal story. In February, I go up to the upper Midwest for a week of Nordic skiing and racing. This year, I took my Action Wipes, and they were just wonderful to get cleaned up after a ski, to feel fresh going out for a meal or other activities. I also gave some to my fellow skiers, and while they were a bit skeptical at first, they became complete converts. For more information, go to the Kansas Cyclist website, and you will see the ad with a link to order. All Kansas Cyclist podcast listeners get 15% off their orders by using the website link or by just entering Kansas on their orders. In accordance with new FTC regulations, the Kansas Cyclist podcast is not provided free Action Wipes and receives remuneration only through the sales on the website. Continuing a feature of our podcast, which we call Bicycle Safety Tips, we are detailing information from bicyclesafe.com and going over their 10 tips on how not to get hit by cars. The discussion today is actually the last tip, number 10, the rear end part 2. This is where a car runs into you from behind. This is what many cyclists fear the most, but is actually not very common. However, it's one of the hardest collisions to avoid since you're usually not looking behind you. Randy, how does a cyclist avoid this one?
Well, there are a number of strategies that can help. One, be visible. If you're riding at night, be sure to use a red reflector and or a red trail light. Kansas state law requires at least one or the other, and both are probably preferable. There's some question as to whether a solid or a flashing tail light is better, but the consensus seems to be that a flashing light is best if you're riding alone, and a solid light is best if you're riding in a group to avoid blinding your companions. And generally, the bigger and brighter, the better.
And I see a lot of cyclists where, you know, they have a light on the bike. They might have a light on their helmet, too. So the more, the merrier, too.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Something else to consider is reflective clothing. You can buy vests similar to the ones that highway workers wear that provide large areas of reflectivity from the front, back, and sides. Reflective ankle bands are also popular as they add an element of movement that makes you more visible. I also use a reflective safety triangle mounted either to my seat back, rack, or backpack. This is very similar to the slow-moving vehicle triangles that tractors are required to display, except, it, of course, it's smaller and it's made of fabric. And I'm told that it shows up really well both day and night.
Yeah, I know from riding with you that is an excellent idea. And I know I've asked you this before, so it's probably a good time to put it on the podcast, is where did you get that?
I should have looked that up before we had the podcast, but I believe the site was called pedigreen.com.
Okay. Well, we'll put it in the show. And I didn't mean to surprise you with that, but it is such a wonderful idea. And we'll put that in the show notes of where you get that triangle.
There are a number of places that you can buy these online. Just do a search for reflective safety triangle. And back to the tips. Number two, choose your route carefully. Streets with less traffic are better than ones with lots of traffic. And low-speed roads are better than high-speed roads. Roads with long sidelines are better than roads with short sidelines. That's all pretty much common sense. You just want to get away from the traffic as much as you can. Mm-hmm. And three, consider riding with a mirror. Personally, I consider a mirror pretty essential. You can usually see cars coming before you can hear them, and using a properly adjusted mirror to look back is easier than turning your head, and which can also cause you to swerve sometimes. The mirror I use is mounted to my glasses, but you can buy ones to mount to your helmet or to your handlebars. A word of advice on mirrors, though, expect it to take a little time to get used to. Test it out on lightly trafficked roads before relying on it on busy roads. And be patient. I found the mirror distracting at first and hard to see out of, but pretty soon it becomes second nature.
Yeah, Randy's a big proponent of this, and I think we've talked about this on previous podcasts too. It took me a while. I went through a number of different ones that on the helmet, ones on the glasses, and I just could not get those to work for me. It was too disorienting, but I did find one on my drop handlebars that works very, very well, and I think this is very, very important to have this piece of safety equipment.
And the fourth and the last tip might seem a little counterintuitive, but the advice is to not ride close to the edge of the roadway. You want to be visible, and positioning yourself well into the lane will make it easier for vehicles approaching from the rear to see you and to recognize that you're there. If you ride too close to the edge, you risk the motorist trying to squeeze past you in the same lane. Also, you want to give yourself room to maneuver, room to avoid debris in the road, and room to wobble a bit without worrying about running into the curb or falling off the edge of the road into a ditch.
Or if a grate comes up on the side of the road that you want to avoid.
That'll do too.
Yep. Well, this concludes our How Not to Get Hit by Cars series from BicycleSafe.com. So we want to thank the folks at Bicycle Safe for putting these tips up and letting us use them in the podcast. Next time, we'll focus on another aspect of bicycle safety. Let's take a moment before we get to the interview and talk about Grease Monkey Wipes. What Grease Monkey Wipes are is individually packaged degreasing cleaning wipes that utilize a natural, non-toxic citrus formula to handle heavy-duty cleaning, including bike grease and road grime. I have used Grease Monkey Wipes now several times, and they are handy after working on your bike before the ride, after the ride, or possibly for a mid-ride repair, such as fixing a flat tire. Due to the portable nature of the product, Grease Monkey Wipes easily fit in a saddlebag or a jersey pocket. The durable nature of the wipes allows them to easily clean not only skin, but also an oily chain, a dirty frame, and more. Kansas Cyclist Podcast listeners can receive a 15% discount by entering Kansas as the coupon code, and there's also a direct link to Grease Monkey Wipes at the website. Again, congratulations to Tim and Aaron and their successful appearance on Shark Tank. As with other disclosures and in accordance with new FTC regulations, the Kansas Cyclist podcast is not provided free grease monkey wipes and receives remuneration only through the sales on the website. Today we will be interviewing Robert Fitzgerald, founder of the Topeka Community Cycle Project. Robert is a Minnesota transplant currently in Topeka, Kansas, attending his first year of law school at the Washburn University School of Law. He is a year-round cyclist and is using his Trek 520 more and more for commuting and just fun rides. His first long-distance ride was a solo ride from Minneapolis, Minnesota to Portland, Oregon via Seattle, Washington in 2000. Robert completed his BA in computer science from the University of Minnesota and his MBA from the University of Mary in Bismarck, North Dakota. He can be seen riding on the streets of Topeka and at the Topeka Community Cycle Project. Welcome, Robert, and thanks so much for being on the podcast today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Robert, tell us a little bit about your background in cycling in general.
My background in cycling, most notably probably is a 2000 bicycle ride out to Portland, Oregon, left from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and went to Portland, Oregon via Seattle, Washington. 2 weeks prior to taking off on the trip, I went to a bicycle shop in Minneapolis and bought a Trek 520 that I'm still riding today. Huh. Got some panniers and read a bunch of stuff online, travel journals and the like, and thought, you know, I have 3 weeks before my senior year starts at the University of Minnesota. I think I should probably do something with my summer. So I jumped on that bike and rode on out there. It took 19 days and did a solo ride, camped along the way. It was a great ride, enjoyed it a ton. And then after that, didn't cycle too much other than recreationally. And then most recently in the last few years, had been making life decisions to locate myself such that I could ride daily. And I was doing that in Fargo, North Dakota. And pretty much utility cycling has been kind of my thing as of late, doing a lot of commuting to work, now commuting to school, running errands, and trying to put as few miles on an automobile as possible.
Yeah, that's wonderful. On the trip that you took out west, that you did that solo.
Yeah, there was a solo ride. Just thought I would give it a go, see what I would come of it. And the best feeling probably was somewhere in Western Montana when I realized at this point in the trip I have ridden my bicycle further than I would have comfortably been able to drive in a day, and it was a great feeling. And then every day after that was great. The best part of it was probably catching up with a pair of guys on the last day of the trip as I was heading into Portland, Oregon. They were doing some long distance riding, commuting, which was admirable. I mean, they were doing 40 miles each way, and they were riding. They saw me coming along, and they thought, "Well, I don't know if we want this guy riding." I said, "Well, can I draft you? You know, I mean, I got two panniers, and I've got my sleeping bag and the mat and everything on the back there. It doesn't look like I'm going to keep up, but with two guys in front and me behind, I was able to keep up, you know, with them the whole way." And then ended up doing 160 miles that day, which was just a massive day of riding. But wow. Started with a near century before lunch, and then you know, everything after that was gravy. So the opportunity to end that trip that day was presented itself, and I jumped at it.
Yeah, especially with that kind of weight on the bike too. Are you doing long distance cycling now?
Not so much. I mean, part of like what I was saying, you know, I mean, everything I'm doing is situating myself so that I can ride everything. So I mean, it's pretty much just riding, you know, probably in that 7 to 12 miles a day range, if that.
Well, tell us about how you came up with the idea for the Topeka Community Cycle Project, and you know, what was the inspiration behind it?
Well, when I was in Fargo, I volunteered some time with a community bicycle workshop that was there, and they had just started, and it was interesting to see how quickly they were able to get up and running and provide services to that community. Was something that I really supported and thought was a great idea. I moved down here to Topeka to attend law school this last summer, and there was no community bicycle workshop. So I thought, well, what might it take in order to establish one here? and made a few phone calls, found a space downtown, worked with a group of people that were interested in the idea, some cyclists that I've been riding with on some, you know, some fun rides with the Critical Mass group here in Topeka, mm-hmm. that you know, has been doing a lot of good things for cycling in Topeka, and they were excited about it, and a few phone calls and some good timing and some good luck, I suspect, have us in a space in downtown right now with bicycles being donated as we speak.
How big is that space that you have?
So we're at 423 South Kansas in downtown Topeka. It's a 2,500 square foot building in downtown. Great storefront frontage. Looks great. It's a great space. It provides a lot of covered storage for bicycles. We have about 40 to 50 bicycles in there right now, and lots of room for more to come in. We have a lot of room for, we've had about a quarter of the space up front for our workspace, and then the rear of the space for covered storage. So up front, we have a couple stands. We have a full set of bicycle tools. We have miscellaneous tools as well, and we'll be opening here within the next month for people to come in and work on their bikes.
How much work has it been to kind of bring that online?
Well, this space that we moved into has been vacant for, I think, 6 years. And we filled a 20-foot roll-off dumpster with demolition debris that we cleared out of that space. So, you know, one of the purposes of our organization is to recycle and refurbish these bicycles and redistribute them back into the community. What we're doing with this building is very similar. You know, we're repurposing it and recycling, you know, it in some sense, because it was just a vacant building. We entered an agreement with a group known as Friends of the Free State Capitol, and they're working on renovating a building. They bought this building so that it wouldn't get razed and turned into a parking lot, but they don't have any use for it. It's in pretty rough shape in some respects, perfect for our needs, and it meets our needs perfectly, but they're limited on what they can do with that. So I approached them, and they were open to the idea of our organization cleaning up that space and using that space for this project, and we have a great great working relationship with them. So it's just a perfect spot for us.
What's the neighborhood like where it's located?
So we're downtown, right across from the post office. We right on Kansas Avenue. We have a bus stop right in front of us. All the buses in Topeka have bike racks on them. So if somebody's out and about and has a problem on their bike, they can you know, board any city bus and get that bike to us, even if they don't have a vehicle to transport that. So that's definitely a plus. Riding in downtown Topeka's. It's enjoyable. It's easy to get around. The roads are wide, so it's a perfect spot. Easy to get to. Centrally located between North Topeka and the rest of Topeka. So it's great.
How's the project set up business wise? Is it a nonprofit?
Yep, we got set up as a nonprofit, filed that paperwork in December with the Secretary of State in Kansas. So we're recognized and incorporated as a nonprofit in Kansas. We're currently working with the Washburn Law Clinic, their business side, to get 501c3 nonprofit status. So that's in the works as well. So we expect to have that here by the end of the year. So that way all donations to the organization will be tax deductible. And that's the main reason for getting that designation.
In addition to donations, what other type of support are you looking for?
Things that we're looking for, and I think that your audience can definitely help with, are the following. We're always looking for volunteers, people that are familiar with bikes at any capacity, you know, at any level, even to the point that they have no experience with bicycles, but they're interested in supporting a community organization. We have volunteer opportunities for people, but I suspect your audience is more familiar than the general public with bicycles and bicycle repair. Looking for people who can help teach people how to fix their bikes. We're a community bicycle workshop, so we don't actually do the repairs for people. That's what a commercial bike shop is for. What we do is we provide a space where we give access to stands, to tools, and we show people how to fix their bicycles. We give them the training in order to be able to do that. We have a library of books and other resources for people to refer to. And then, of course, volunteers coming in with that knowledge of bicycle repair to help people fix their bikes. So volunteers with bicycle experience, a great asset that I think we can definitely use. Parts are things that we can use. We're getting a lot of bikes in. Like I said, we have 40, 50 bikes in right now. We have dozens more set to come in with people that have said that they're just waiting to come down and drop them off. So we have the bikes, but if these other bikes that are coming in are going to be similar to the ones that have been donated thus far, I think it's safe to say that we're going to see a lot of the consumables being needed going forward. Seems that Kansas weather is pretty rough on the rubber around here, on the tires. So tires are really pretty brittle. So they're just kind of falling off. So we don't have tires. So somebody who might be listening that has some extra tires that they might just discard because they don't meet their needs currently, those tires might still have enough miles on them for, say, a utility cyclist to be here in Topeka, who's only riding a few miles compared to 60, 70 miles per ride. So those would be things that, you know, instead of just tossing those, that they could be donated to our organization and other consumables, chains and things along those lines, extra parts that people might have lying around. And of course, bikes. People donate bikes to the organization and we can recycle those, refurbish them, and get them back into the community to people who complete one of our programs.
On the types of bikes that you're getting, are you accepting all types of bikes, or are you concentrating primarily in, say, commuter utility bikes, or does it matter?
We're open to all bikes for bicycle donations. All bikes. We've been getting all kinds coming in. We have you know, some 1970s, 80s Schwinn's cruisers coming in. We have specialized mountain bikes coming in. There's some department store type bikes that are coming in. Lots of different, you know, BMX and kids bikes are coming in. So if it has two wheels, you know, some of them don't even have two wheels, they're just frames, but you get what I'm saying. I mean, we are not limiting them. And people who are coming in to fix these bikes up, who are then receiving one of these bikes, they might have different needs. One person might be needing a bike for a daily commute, something that they can affix a rack to. There's a certain style of bike that's going to work better for them. Others are looking for a bicycle just for recreation so that they can, you know, enjoy nice Kansas weather, whatever. We have those types of, you know, we're going to find somebody that's going to be interested in one of these bikes.
I see.
Are you getting most of your donations from the immediate Topeka area right now?
A lot of bikes coming in from the Topeka area. Yep. We had an article that ran in the Capital Journal that kind of outlined what we were doing, and that did a lot for raising awareness of our organization. It came out pretty early in our inception, so the pictures are of an empty building and a lot of you know, talk of ideas that are coming up. But it was good for getting that word out of what we were trying to do, and the community's been has received it very well. People say that they, you know, they have these bikes that just been sitting in their garages collecting dust in the basement, wherever. They didn't want to throw them away because they thought it could be put to use in some way, but they just didn't know what. And here's an organization now that's accepting these bicycles and is going to make them available for the community to come in and have them be repurposed, recycled.
Well, tell us about the program you set up called Earn a Bike.
Well, one of the programs that we have is called, like you said, Earn a Bike. And what it is that somebody comes into our organization, they say that they're interested in a bicycle, and we'll take down their names and we'll get a form set up for them. And then what they do is that they make an investment in the organization. They volunteer 10 hours at the shop in any capacity. We kind of have a list of things that we need help with that day, and they'll assist with general cleaning, with you know, dismantling of bikes, with helping somebody who's currently working on a bike, any number of things to get those 10 hours of volunteer hours in, which then equate to a shop credit, which can then be turned in for one of these project bikes. And at that point, their name is affixed to that bike, and they have 30 days to fix that bike and work with one of the shop mechanics to overhaul that bicycle so that it's safe for riding. And at that point, they will have, you know, through that process, they'll learn how to fix most issues that they will run into with that bicycle. So and then when they leave, they have a road safe bicycle that they, you know, invested the time in to the shop. We made an investment back in them, teaching them how to do this. Win-win situation. Now when they're out there riding this bike, if they run into an issue with it, break a spoke, get a flat tire, pedal falls off, whatever, it's not something where they're just going to ditch it in an alley, because they've been empowered with that information on how to repair it, and they have a space where they can return to where they'll have the tools in order to do that.
That's a great idea.
In addition to getting them the box, are you providing any sort of educational programs for them, or any safety info?
We do have we're going to have a list of safety checklist for the bikes, right? But and then we'll also have a complimentary list of riding safety checklists, things to be that they should be aware of when they're out there riding. People are donating helmets, but we don't have a lot of those. It's not a state law to wear a helmet, but we highly encourage people to do so. Those are some of the things. But, you know, riding and being aware of where you're at and your surroundings on the road, things along those lines, we'll be providing that for people.
You are telling people about the registration licensing ordinance in Topeka, aren't you?
Yeah, we don't want them to get that hefty $10 fine.
Plus court cost.
Right. So I think that one of the things that I have a call into the fire department right now to see if they'd like to see a satellite registration point at the bike shop, where we'd be able to register bikes as they get repaired and sent out. Might not be possible, but it's an idea. But we definitely want people knowing that they need to go get those bikes registered as well, because, well, it's the law here in Topeka.
You had talked about a number of people. How many people in total are involved in the project, and are there some full and part-time folks that are regulars?
Well, it's a fully volunteer-run mm-hmm. organization. We have a Facebook page that lists, 150 people that are supporting the cause. At mm-hmm. our first volunteer event, which we have pictures up online of, we had over a dozen people show up to help fill up that 20-yard dumpster. And then ever since then, we've been open Thursdays from 5 to 7 for people to come and drop off their bikes and parts or whatever. And at the same time, being kind of open for volunteers to come down and introduce themselves and get a better understanding of what we're planning on doing. The weather has been just absolutely terrible for those nights through February. But we have been open, and we've seen, probably an additional, dozen or two dozen people come through at those times, saying that they're interested in helping out once doors open. So we're looking at having a volunteer meeting coming up here within the week or so, and just kind of gauge what kind of support we have, so we can establish the kind of hours that we'll be able to maintain.
See,
you planning to do a big grand opening type celebration?
I've always been one to under promise and over deliver. So I think that we'll probably kind of let things go a little bit and see how it's working, work out some of those kinks or some logistics stuff that we want to work. Initially, we'll be open solely for individuals to work on their own bikes. So we'll have those open shop hours where people can come in and volunteer and in the shop, or alternatively work on their own bikes if they have some things that they want. So we'll be a space that's open for that. Once we kind of get that running, I see probably within a month or two thereafter, we'll start the Earn a Bike program, where individuals in the community can come in and volunteer and then pick out a bike, and we'll have the staffing, the volunteers there to to meet those, to facilitate that program.
In addition to the Earn a Bike program, are you going to have bikes just for sale?
Nope. We will not be having any bikes for sale down there. They will be... people are donating those bikes down there with the idea of what our organization does is, you know, refurbish them and recycle them, get them back into the community. I think that we want to be pretty true to that. So all bikes that are donated that will be available are available through the Earn a Bike program or one of our youth programs that's very similar.
Well, what else is going on in the Topeka cycling community? I mean, you have Critical Mass, right? How big is that?
Critical Mass Ride, since I've been down here, has fluctuated in size, as I'm sure it does everywhere. But we generally have a consistent 8 to 12 riders for that in a group that has been as large as, since I've been here, I think I've seen it up to 25. But it's been as low as a couple riders as well. But I also didn't start, I started riding with those guys maybe in August of this year, but I know that their group is much larger than that on Facebook, and that's actually been a great group for getting information out to people who have then connected with the Topeka Community Cycle Project to say, hey, we're interested in helping out with you guys too. But Critical Mass has been a fun ride. The first Fridays that they have down here in Topeka where the art galleries are open to the public. First Friday of the month, Critical Mass makes a point of riding on those and hitting some of the art galleries. It's always a fun time. So it's a good tight knit group of people, and you know, anyone's welcome to join them.
I don't know how much you're involved with some of these other projects or things that are going on in Topeka, like the Complete Streets Initiative. I understand you guys are there's a group that's riding in the St. Patrick's Day Parade.
Yeah, we've got we're in the St. Patrick's Day Parade. The Topeka Community Cycle Project is.
Yeah.
We've got a probably about a dozen riders minimum right now that I think we're going to see that day dressed up in green with streamers and maybe talking about how we can get some banners on bikes so that we can let the people know that it is the Topeka Community Cycle Project, not just 12 people on bikes that jumped into the parade. But we got a few ideas, like PVC flying off the back of the seat post or whatever and onto a single wheel. I don't know, we'll figure something out. We got a few days here for that, but that's gonna be a fun ride. Looking forward to that. I've had a lot of conversations with people in the community. Karen Hiller was city council member, stopped by the shop. She rode to the shop the other night when we were open and introduced herself. It was nice meeting her. She gave me a list of contacts throughout the city to touch base with on a few other ideas that we're working on. So that was really great. Met with Jim Ogle, who's with one of the television stations here in town, and we talked about the Complete Streets. We talked about the Healthy Neighborhoods initiatives, a couple different things that he's involved with. I'm new to the area. I came down here from Minnesota, and Topeka is you know, it's a new area for me. I'm not familiar as much with all the things that are going on, but it really seems like it's an exciting time to be in Topeka as far as cycling goes. I've been riding. I rode year-round, had the metal-studded tires on the bike. I came down here, and I've been counting down to February 15th because when I was here a year ago, it was 50 degrees. A little bit challenging. A nice Minnesota winter down here in Topeka. But the it's been a very decent place to ride, and I think that, like I said, there's a lot of things that are happening right now that seem to me, at least, indicate that Topeka is really starting to embrace cyclists and saying, you know, they have a place on the road, respect them, and it's a good time to be here. And I think some people that share that idea are in some key places, like I said, on city council, in the media, and are doing some really good things down here. And they've contacted me at the shop simply because they think that the shop can be kind of a can be a lot of things to a lot of people. You know, my interest happens to be in seeing people with limited means be able to get a bicycle so that they can get to and from work, they can get to and from class, that it empowers them. They're able to, instead of being limited to one mode of transportation, walking at 3 miles an hour, they're able to be riding at 12 to 15 miles an hour. It really frees somebody up to get a lot of things done and get somebody around town. Mobility is a very important thing. So clearly, you know, that's kind of my that's what's driving me in this effort. But I think that the shop can be a good thing and a voice for some of these other initiatives that are happening here in the community as well. And it'll be up to the volunteers to kind of decide where the shop goes in that and in what directions.
I saw that the article on the Community Cycle Project in the Washburn Review was filed under the label Extreme Sports. I wonder if you guys, I wonder if you guys had noticed that. And what you thought.
I didn't see that. That's funny. It seems like
people are, you know, don't know quite where to put bicycling. Is it recreational? You know, is it transportational?
Well, you know, and it's all of the above, right? So it's extreme in that nature, I guess. But yeah, that's funny. We're extreme sports. Maybe it's because the three of us look so tough on our recycled BMX bikes that we pulled out of the stack. I don't know why they'd put it under extreme sports. It's funny.
That's funny. Well, how do people get involved? I mean, how are you getting the word out, and how do people donate?
Well, we're open for donations right now. Mm-hmm. It's not, I'll be the first to say it's not the easiest, easiest process right now. It's just because we are somewhat limited until we're able to really be open for shop hours as well. At which point people will be able to donate at any time that we're open. But we are open for donations right now at 423 South Kansas in downtown Topeka on Thursdays from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. So people just come down and they can donate their bike, donate any parts or anything that they want. If people want to get more information, they can email us at topeka@cycleproject.org. They can check out the website at cycleproject.org. We're on Facebook with a page that gets regularly updated. They can just search for Topeka Community Cycle Project, and it should pull up the page, at which point they can add that, and we'll show up in their status updates. And we're on Twitter at twitter.com/cycleprojector.
Using all the social media outlets, and we'll be sure to put that in the show notes too. So,
oh, that sounds great. Yeah. So those are kind of the means. And then, you know, once we start opening to the public for more services that we'll be offering, I suspect that we'll see a minimum of 2 days a week that will be open in the evenings, and one of the weekend days, likely, you know, either a Saturday or Sunday afternoons, that I suspect we should have no issue staffing.
So how do you find the time going to law school? It's got to be busy enough as it is.
Law school is proving to be very challenging and time consuming. Yeah. But I've just kind of etched out a few hours that I'll be able to do this. Classes ended mid-December and started riding downtown in the sleet and snow to look at some of the buildings that were downtown, just to kind of get some ideas, and just started making some phone calls during the winter break. And it just seemed I just kept getting call after call after call that was going through to the right person at the right time. And we were established, we had a space, and then school started. So I've just kind of just etched out a block of 3 hours that I just commit to going to and from the shop to be open on these Thursdays. And then, you know, we'll set up a couple other things. Spring break's coming up here, so we should get a lot of stuff done over that time too.
You got some fellow law students that are helping out?
Yeah, we do. Okay. We have a board of directors, and two of whom are, law students, and, fiance of one of the law students has been very active in this. So it's, you know, it's I can only pull those into this project that are within my reach. And right now, everyone in law school is kind of within my reach. So yeah, we've got the law school working on our nonprofit status. We've got students that are board members and volunteers, and they've been pretty, you know, like I said, the community has been very receptive to this.
How big is your board?
We are currently adding people to the board of directors. Our bylaws call for a 7 to 12 member board. Because my reach and scope and knowledge of Topeka is somewhat limited. We're taking it kind of slow. We really want to make sure that we have a diverse board of directors, mm-hmm. of people who are interested in this process. So if someone is interested in serving on the board or has a skill set that they think that they could really bring to this board that could help us in the fundraising side, in the board governance side, in the day-to-day operations, business side, you know, that marketing side, any of those types of things, they're welcome to email me at topeka@cycleproject.org and let us know that they have that interest and would like to serve in some capacity like that. So that's where that's at right now.
So, well, tell me, this is kind of more of a personal question. Since you're so interested in grassroots and community work, is that affecting the type of law that you want to practice eventually when you become graduate? Or
they tell me I don't have to make. I thought I had to make that decision my second year. This is my first year in law school. Then I talked to a bunch of 2Ls, and they said no, you don't have to worry about it till your third year. So I'm not worrying about it for another year and a half, 2 years here. So
we can't get an exclusive scoop here for Kansas cyclists
on what area I'm going to practice. Yeah, right.
Well, it's got to affect you somewhat, though. I mean, in the long run. Well, we'll see. We'll see in a few years. Where you end up. Robert, anything else that you would like to tell our listeners about the Topeka Cycle Project or just Topeka cycling in general?
Well, cycling in Topeka is great. Come on out. Join the Critical Mass folk on Fridays, 5:30. Mm-hmm. You can check them out online. You guys have a link to them, so I'll just assume that people will find it through there to see what cycling in Topeka is like. I moved here, and I'll be honest, I was actually really terrified of cycling in Topeka and thought there's no way that anyone can ride in Topeka. And that was when I was riding on 17th and when I was riding on 10th, which is west out by Wanamaker. And that was just ridiculous. That was just me not doing enough research ahead of time to find what routes there are. There are a lot of great routes through Topeka that are very bicycle friendly. Got the Shunga Trail, which gets you east-west across town without issue. So there's a lot of great places to ride in Topeka. I will do I will ask your listeners if they do have tools that are lying around collecting dust, if they have parts, if they have bikes mm-hmm. that are just sitting around and they think that they could be put to better use. Yes, they could be. They could be put to better use at the Topeka Community Cycle Project. Yeah. Donate them. We'll put them to use at, they'll become tax deductible. It's a win-win for everybody. And if someone's interested in just coming down, saying hi, introducing themselves, it would be great to hear from people. 423 South Kansas Avenue, Topeka Community Cycle Project.
Yeah. Well, Robert, thanks so much for being on the podcast. I just love your enthusiasm. This is a great project. Wish you all the luck. And hopefully our helping you publicize this will get you some more donations and maybe some more volunteers too.
I appreciate it. I appreciate what you guys do, too, being the central location for looking to see what's going on in cycling in Kansas.
Take care.
Thank you.
We appreciate you downloading episode 17 of the Kansas Cyclist Podcast, and we do hope that you will subscribe so that you will not miss out on future episodes. We have a lot of interesting news, information, bicycle safety tips, and interviews that we have planned for future episodes, so please come back. Also, take the time and leave your feedback, and or if you would like to become a sponsor, please write or send your audio file to podcast@kansascyclist.com or call us at 913-938-6855. Remember, there are show notes on the website which include links to all the information that have been discussed on each podcast. We would also like to thank Mark Fransky for allowing us to use his song called Brush Creek Crossing as our theme music. You can see more of Mark's work at banjodog.com. Take care and cycle safe.